everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. This will be our 29th episode so far, and we are ecstatic to announce, alongside ESL UK, that we have just confirmed ESL 1 Birmingham, which is going to be the first Dota 2 major in the UK, as far as I know, which is absolutely massive. So alongside the Face It CSGO major that has been confirmed for the end of the year. Looks like it's going to be an absolutely insane year for UK esports. And to dive into this in a little bit more detail, we've brought James Dean, the managing director of ESL UK, and
hello,
and most notably known as an esports roundtable alumni, Rob Black, the COO of ESL UK. Guys, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hello.
Pleasure.
So before we get stuck into the nitty-gritty of just kind of diving into this event, how Birmingham actually won this event, and what this kind of means for the UK industry, it'd be great to just dive into your stories in a little bit more detail. Now, Rob was our second episode of the Esports Roundtable all those many months ago in August last year. So we'll get started with James's story, and then Rob, if you can just take us through how you got to where you are today. So James, how did you get stuck in esports? What's been your history as a gamer personally? And yeah, how did you find yourself in the position that you are today?
How long we got, Joe?
You'll be fine.
So my story starts in the Commodore days. I'm kind of old now. I have a baby. and it was, you know, in the days of buying a new game on tape at the weekend, probably on a Saturday, for £2.99, and then getting home and waiting what felt like 3.5 hours to load and then play. And then from that, it was straight to PC. But yes, then it all started, and we, at a very early stage, we were LAN gaming, you know, bringing our PCs around to the friends' houses. Back then, we were playing a lot of Doom and Quake. Quake 1 was probably our biggest game, and lots of other games competitively. Dungeon Keeper probably sunk a lot of hours in that. And then with Doom as well, I mean, back then, obviously, the internet wasn't, it was around, but it was really expensive. And then the cable companies started to do free evening phone calls. So then what we did was dial up each other over modem to modem and just play competitively like that. But it could only be 1v1. But that worked quite well with Doom and stuff.
How did you get stuck in on the business side?
While I was at university doing a computer science degree, I actually wrote for a computer magazine when people used to read magazines. So I wrote for title for Computer Shopper magazine.
Yeah.
And it got me really into the industry, especially on a hardware level. So, you know, all the like NVIDIA and ATI, Intel, AMD, and all the big guys, Asus, Gigabyte, lots that have come and gone back in the day. And then I ended up working for a computer reseller, basically marketing and PRing their PC range, specking them up and stuff. And then finally I thought, this is great fun, but I want to do it for more people. So I jumped the hurdle and started my own agency, you know, my Todd. And I picked up, you know, some amazing clients at an early stage just due to the people I knew. And one thing led to another, and we ended up basically running quite a few big gaming brands, but including SteelSeries. And it was SteelSeries, because we're doing lots of esports stuff with SteelSeries. You know, we're supporting EGL and lots of Insomnias back in the day. And our German colleague at SteelSeries just said one day, you should speak to ESL. And I was like, oh, and thought of that. And we had this one of those awkward phone calls where it's like, hi, what do you do then? What do you do? I mean, obviously we'd heard of ESL in the periphery, but it wasn't a major thing, really. You know, in the UK, it was kind of very German and mainland European led. And, you know, that's back in 2012, and we just got stuck into it. So we kind of, actually, we treated it almost like a marketing campaign at first.
Sure.
And and it just started rolling through, and it only took about just over a year for us to realize that what we really needed to do was focus on a national league and get that sustainability and consistency in place.
Nice.
Which was our main remit, to be fair, but that's the short version.
And then Rob, where do you slot into this? Because I know that from the first show we were talking about your background in the Call of Duty pro mod days, and you worked with a few organizations on the team side, and then you joined ESL 2 or 3 years ago. So where do you kind of slot into the journey? Where was ESL UK at when you joined?
So I kind of started to look for a full-time position in esports in like late 2014. And it took me a while to sort of find something that was the right thing for me and my skill set. But in sort of September of 2015, a job advert came up for a product manager at ESL UK. And I remember very sharply having a phone interview with James while I was walking my dog on the beach down in Brighton, and talking to him about the role and you know what it kind of entailed, and I said, "It sounds great. Well, as long as this job and working for ESL UK is the place that I feel I'm going to be able to help the UK esports industry the most, then I'll stay."
I remember, Rob, that I think I said something like, "We'll see you tomorrow then." You were like, "Yeah,
yeah, yeah." Because it was a Friday, and I basically started the following Monday. I was just like, "Well, I'll just take holiday from my other job and just leave." And then it was the week of MCM Comic Con as well, and we had the finals of like the national championship and things like that. I think I was at the time I was not necessarily number nine person ever employed, but I was number nine in the door at the point then of ESL UK.
Well, I mean, if you look, I mean, our first ever dedicated employee for ESL UK was Pete. Right. But so I think in terms of ESL UK specifically, it's probably number 4 or 5, I think.
Yeah.
Sure. Something like that. And where was the scale of the scene back then? Because obviously, you know, this new...
Still evolving.
Still evolving in two short
as
words.
As we ever will be.
Exactly. But this event, for me, kind of signifies like a really massive milestone for one, just the state of and strength of the UK audience, because I feel like the international travel around major events isn't as strong as most people might think. It's mostly kind of bringing together those local communities, but also kind of what this may inspire around all of the various siloed aspects
it's
of the UK.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Exactly right. And you know, the amount of times, and you'll probably get this, Joe, is where people are like, "Oh, why is the UK so far behind in esports?"
Exactly.
Blah blah, and that's the consistent narrative. And the problem is that, you know, as the global industry is moving forwards, the UK really is as well. But obviously, we're all just sort of like catching up constantly. And so really, we've been hitting home to HQ for a long time now, saying, "Look, we just need a big tentpole event that just shows that the UK is the fifth largest gaming industry in the world, gaming market in the world.
Sure.
It is the second largest European market, and you know, the potential is absolutely huge. You know, people talk about, well, it's just a console country. That's not true at all. Actually, the percentage of PC gamers and console gamers are very similar.
23% console, 22% PC.
So we know that there's the appetite here, and you're exactly right. It's just showing that inspiration. It's showing what amazing things, you know, the UK scene can do and already achieved. And in fact, if you look in certain areas of the industry, UK is already quite dominant, especially on the talent side, right? And we're now seeing players individually making it to very high levels of esports.
Sure.
As well.
Like I still think there's a massive underrepresentation of homegrown in-game talent on the global scene, but we are still the largest exporter of broadcast talent globally by a massive margin. It's quite interesting to kind of take a look at the state of UK esports, because we've got an episode coming through in the next few weeks with David Harris from Direwolves over in Australia, and they've been kind of speaking about the Oceania market and how they actually look up to how well the UK has done so far. So it's all kind of just a matter of perspective. Like at the esports bar, we were speaking with folks from India, from South America, and from South Africa, and a bunch of other places, and they were all kind of looking up to the kind of process and structure that we had. But obviously, you know, we and most of Europe, I would say, would probably look to NA, and then NA probably looks to just the scale of China and South Korea.
Big love triangle.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think when you get to like that sort of size of like Asia and the US and stuff, there's some other forces that come into play. Mm. I think if you're looking at like a national like level, then you know there are things that you know, we can learn from Germany and from Sweden, and some of that comes down to actually just broadband infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Sweden has had like such great broadband for so many years, and the UK is just, I don't know,
abysmal.
We're behind. It's
getting there. It's getting there.
Yeah, it's getting there, but it's
what is this fiber optic?
But you know, I think we would agree with those, you know, guys like in Australia and in South Africa. You know, we feel we're on the right path here in the UK.
I think
there's more consolidation to happen, right, and progression and things. But
I think it's probably there's a large amount actually in terms of expectation. I think because the UK is such a large broadcast market. It's a media industry.
Sure.
Because it is such a large gaming market, and we are English speaking, obviously. There is a very high expectation of what should come out of the UK. And actually, if you think back, there has been some, you know, pretty large events in the UK already, especially focused around London.
Yeah.
You know, the LCS was at Wembley, and that was on BBC Three, right?
Like, yeah.
So already we've had this sort of achievement, but I think what we'll really focus around ESL One Birmingham is, first of all, you know, it's the story around Devolution in the UK, I think, is super important, because, you know, Birmingham is the second largest city in the UK. Only London ever gets any sort of action, and actually Birmingham is really accessible, and it actually shares that opportunity for a much wider community to get involved and support something that they truly love.
It probably has a much, much more available space for hotels and conferences and larger events at probably like a lower price too, which is always awesome.
So I think, you know, we hope that obviously being a Dota 2 major and an ESL 1 is a big thing in its own right, but I think what the opportunity is for the UK is to demonstrate what that means to the wider esports market in the UK.
Sure.
So, you know, looking at in all of the other aspects of the business that drives directly. And the beauty is that obviously we get, it follows up only a few months later, we have a CSGO major. With Faceit, it's just incredible that we have this situation in 1 year. So I think this is the year the UK gets put on the map.
I think this is for... Jay's right. Yeah, this is the year that, like, particularly from a mainstream UK media perspective, we are able to show other gamers, you know, in the UK, second biggest gaming market in Europe, that esports is a thing, and it's here and it's happening on your doorstep.
Sure.
And actually, it's really, really, really fun to engage with, even as just a spectator, even if you haven't really played the games before. And I think that's like one of the big things that we'll see this year.
Sure. So let's lift the lid on how the majors actually get assigned to various areas, because I'm not sure if this is if this process is out there in the public domain, and if there's any kind of sensitivity around the process, then please do let me know and we can kind of just skate around it. But how do the majors for Dota and for CSGO actually get rolled out? I assume that there is a pitching process from all of the tournament organizers and event organizers. Those that are ESL specific, there must be a slightly different process to say face it winning a CSGO major. So just kind of break that down for us in high level terms, and how did kind of ESL 1 Birmingham actually come to be?
Well, obviously ESL itself had already kind of won the bid for four majors.
Okay.
This year, and it was about positioning those with Valve. So basically we're in a fortunate situation with ESL, but if that event for some reason doesn't become a major, then it will still sustain itself. It's still going to run. We're not relying on it being a major in order to happen. So you've seen a great example with ESL 1 Cologne, right, which had to be a major at the beginning, but now if Valve pulls that major status for whatever reason, it could be a date or a timing thing, or it could be that they want to operate with a new player in the market, or it could be a host of reasons. And generally speaking, as you well know, Joe, like the esports ecosystem is quite a complex environment, and the multitude of factors involved in finding the right environment, finding the right location, timing, the way the community works in terms of monetization, strategy. Everything that's combined, that's a kind of a discussion and a progress that happens over quite a long period of time.
Sure.
And so with Birmingham, obviously we did have this potential date in Manila at the time, which basically didn't come off. And ESL looked at some other cities where we operate globally, and from a UK stance, what we need to do is show, well, what's the environment and what's the solution, if you like, we could present. So that was kind of our job, to fly the UK flag and say, well, here's all the factors to be considered from our perspective. And from a financial perspective, from community drive, from location and the venue, securing dates, collaborative engagement with lots of different third parties, such as the city of Birmingham itself, and how we actually work together to make this happen. But the job's not complete yet, right? We still, to make this a success, we are absolutely relying on the Dota 2 community in the UK to make this happen. Like, yeah, we've got the date, we've got the venue secured, it's happening, but without the support from the community, it's not sustainable. It's completely reliant on the community making this work. And if it does work, he'll be back again. As a major, maybe not, but as ESL 1, for sure. And I think that's our opportunity in the UK right now.
Awesome. That's a huge opportunity. And as someone who has made the, from what I've heard, unconventional switch from League of Legends to Dota recently, I am super hyped that this is happening. So these kind of milestone events help put the industry in the UK kind of on a pedestal in a global perspective. But as you've just mentioned, it's all about the community actually engaging and being aware that this is happening in the first place. So grassroots esports is a massive focus for the next few years. Like, I feel like the two main targets that the whole industry is actually looking to shoot for is, one, validating the level of investment by actually being able to commercialize appropriately, and two, building an ecosystem that allows a path to pro for fans and for those that actually want to start to work in the industry to be pros or to engage with esports at whichever level they want to get involved in. From the state of the UK side, these events are amazing and it kind of will drag up a lot of activity, but I feel like it would be great to highlight some organizations that have been doing amazing work so far. And one of the ones that I kind of want to shout out at this point is 13, which is X111, based out of Manchester. They've been doing some absolutely awesome stuff with local schools. They've been bringing together pretty high numbers of students for Overwatch events, or like quite a lot of the kids are getting involved in the production side too. So it's like an amazing example of small organizations that are kind of taking this on themselves to start either using esports as a way to teach kids about the games industry, or just actually putting a structure down. How does ESL kind of work with these entities, and what's your kind of opinion on the state of grassroots esports in the UK? I mean, with Cloud9 stepping in with Code Red, they've got a massive remit to kind of build up the amateur and semi-pro side for Overwatch. So there's quite a lot of supposed focus on doing this, and I think over the next 2 years we might see a lot of progress.
How many times do we hear our stories, our personal stories of saying, "See, Mum, yeah. It was worth me playing computer games."
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, joking aside, what the process right now is an education process. It's explaining and demonstrating what esports can mean to individuals, without, super crucially, without forgetting that the whole premise of why people play computer games is because it's darn good fun. Like, that should always be categorically the reason in why anyone from the player perspective especially is involved in this industry, is because they absolutely love it, right? And that does kind of apply to many other industries, especially sports industries, where, you know, you've got a passion for the game of football and you love playing it or love watching it, etc. And I think as time goes by, I mean, we've been working a lot with the Digital Schoolhouse, which is a campaign run by Yuki.
Yeah, we had Deborah and Shanila on a few weeks back. I'm actually a coach for one of the teams that's playing in Kingston.
Well done. There we go.
It will be yesterday that they were playing.
A couple of our guys were mentors for a couple of schools as well. And I think that sort of activity we implore. We'd love to get involved in that sort of thing and you know, any form of support. But Rob specifically is leading, you know, our internal strategy, if you like, on an educational front. And we kind of go one step higher on that educational path. And we're actually looking at kind of university level stuff. But Rob, you might want to explain.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess this is like a bit of a step beyond like the grassroots engagement. This is more to do with how do we encourage people that are very keen on esports, but perhaps aren't able to become a pro player, for them to understand that there are career paths within esports.
Sure.
So the stuff that we're doing with York University and also Leicester University, they're about creating degree programs or modules that are electives that attach onto current degrees. And so your students are able to get an understanding of the esports industry as a whole, and then apply their, you know, degree level education to the workplace if they want to come and get involved in esports in another way. I think I kind of echo what James said, is like that whole mum, look, you know, it wasn't a waste of time for me playing games, like that's almost like the essence of grassroots esports in a way, in that it's like if you're playing lots of games and having fun with it, well then, you know, there's a pathway into, you know, semi-pro or becoming something that's involved in the background. And like basically everything that ESL does is based on and is grassroots esports. It's just that, you know, we also have that stuff at the top of the tree with the, you know, the pro players on a global level.
Awesome. Yeah, guys, I'm so hyped for this event. I really hope that it blows the roof off, and that that, you know, from a broadcast perspective, that everybody gets the numbers that it needs. That's going to be super exciting. And yeah, I just hope that this is the kind of year where we start to see some more exponential growth around actually getting more attention on the UK industry, with all of potential plans around Riot Games doing some ERCS franchising. I don't know whether there's going to be any orgs that will be based over here. That's quite exciting. There's always new mobile titles in the works. There's the expansion of franchising for the Overwatch League. Like, I know that you guys are pretty keen on keeping everything as open as possible, but with a lot of investment in the NA side, a lot of that's going to start to kind of return back to Europe as those kind of global plans get on the way. So I just think that since about 2016, from my side, we've just been kind of absolutely flying, and it's really awesome to see that the UK industry actually get this event, and well, most of these events in for the rest of this year. Like, I remember Rob on our first conversation, we were like, "Why is the UK industry so shit?" not absolutely terrible, but why are we so far behind? And just in the course of 6 or 7 months, you know, we're here, which is, you know, I think the proof's in the pudding.
If we take just the ESL UK office, I mean, the overall global esports industry is growing around 30% year on year. The UK, just the UK office for ESL, is growing more than 50% year on year. So we're showing that we're catching up in terms of the activity. And I think what's really, there's a few pillars. I think the UK has a special place for esports, and that is certainly the talent, you know, the broadcast talent, but also the actual players themselves. I think we have a huge opportunity there as a country, and then also the back end, like the creativity behind the broadcast productions. You know, it's rife as the UK as an entire country. Like, the amazing content that comes out of the UK and is distributed globally, it's incredible. And I think that we'll kind of follow that on an esports level as well, but that also extends to the actual game IP. I think we're going to start seeing very soon some amazing titles emerge within the esports space, remembering crucially that, you know, it shouldn't be the goal for every game to get to the level of, say, League of Legends or CSGO.
Sure.
That is not what we're trying to achieve. Well, I don't think any game's trying to achieve. And if it sets that as the goal, I think, you know, it could be doomed for failure. But if it follows the community and the community follows the game, and it's built up together, I think it can get anywhere. And I think the UK, some of the UK IP from the developers and publishers, it has a huge chance. I mean, we've been keeping a very keen eye and speaking a lot to Battalion, for example, the Bulkhead guys. The work they're doing with their communities is exactly what's needed to really, you know, snowball that opportunity for them to make a serious stance in the esports industry for that game specifically. And you know, I would predict that we're going to have, the UK will have, you know, at least 4 or 5 titles that have a good foothold within the esports industry and well recognized in the next two years or maybe 3 years. I really can see that happen. And I think on the player side of it as well, I mean, we've started to really stop using the word semi-pro. I think it's not the right description for a potential gamer, because actually the way in which you become really good at games isn't in the same way as, right, I'm going to have to train and practice and go through that kind of more difficult stage of trying of upping your game, where really people do that naturally within the game.
It's not,
and the environment.
There's not loads of like Rocky montages of people just kind of working the right hand on the mouse.
That's a great analogy. I think what we're trying to do is just make sure there's an environment that if someone really is that good, and really does enjoy it and is completely passionate about that game, there's a clear opportunity to take that forward. And I think the potential is there, as you said earlier. It's just unlocking that potential. It's discovering that potential and people discovering the opportunity. And you know, that's what the National League is there for, in order to make a platform for every aspect of talent, really, to hone their craft. Whether you're a gamer, you're in the back end space, or you're a broadcast talent, etc. It's a sustainable and consistent method in order to keep stepping up on that and that goal. And I think the UK has got some amazing other projects underway. You know, with what Game are doing with Belong stores across the country. You know, a model that really, you know, we saw with HMVs in the past. You know, I think it was just too early. It was not the right time. But we're seeing also PC World do the same thing. They recently opening their Fulham store as a gaming center. You know, I think for all of us, Dixon's or PC World has had that stigma of going in and then being pestered by a salesperson. You know, like, can I help you? What are you buying? Whereas, you know, what we're trying to show is that, no, we're not interested in that. What we're interested in is engaging with our local community, you know, as a store, and saying, here's a great environment for you to come and play, hang out, talk tech, talk gaming, and a really create an opportunity for those hubs. And I personally hope that that idea will not just be, you know, for commercial partners like that. I can see that extending, you know, to after school clubs and libraries and uni. We're already seeing actually a lot of student unions and adopting esports societies, and that's just a natural aspect. I think it will just continue to extend in that way, and everything that grows the esports industry will be community led at some point, at some arrangement, with every single game that's coming up.
Yeah, it's amazing time, and I'm really quite curious to see, especially how the Varsity side starts to establish itself. Like, I know there are quite like some really interesting projects in the way from across the UK industry, just to see how that actually gets structured out. We are always, as always, running up against the clock, so thank you so much for all the insight so far, and I think that it would be great to kind of circle around after the event and maybe dive into this in a bit more detail. But before we let you go, let's dive into some more philosophical rapid fire questions. So Rob, let's start with you. Who has been your biggest mentor or source of inspiration in or outside of the esports industry, and what was the kind of best piece of advice that you've got so far? And then James will go to you. Robert?
He dropped off.
Sorry.
Well, did you fall asleep?
I'm here.
No, you motherfucker.
It's me rambling on so much.
Like, I forgot my microphone is muted. Sorry. I guess my biggest inspiration in esports is probably Odie. I've always, like, really respected how he's basically, like, no nonsense. And he has a really clear idea of, like, what he wanted to do and what he wanted to achieve in esports. And, like, he's kind of basically never failed to do that. I mean, it's taken time to do it. But in that regard, definitely OD. And then best bit of advice? Well, nobody's ever given me any advice, so.
Is that because you don't allow that, Rob? Or
probably.
So maybe something that you've read from outside of the industry that's been a source of inspiration or advice for you?
I must admit, I listen to quite a lot of Alan Watts. I don't know if you know the Buddhist philosopher, but I find that he has some quite interesting advice for life in general, in terms of how to get along with people and be part of this planet, this crazy planet that we live on.
Interesting. Very, very cool. Yeah, I absolutely love that stuff. James, your biggest mentor and the best piece of advice that you've received?
I think all my advice, business advice, is just quite boring, so I won't go into that. But but I think inspirationally, there's probably a couple of names, one inside and one outside of the gaming industry. But, you know, Mr. Musk has definitely got to be up there for me because of the innovative way in which he you know, money's no object to him. He just, he has a vision and he'll just drive with it. He doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's kind of, he comes across as very eccentric in that manner. And you know, the stuff he's working on, it all makes sense. It all, you know, he's looking way, way far in advance, but bringing it to now and taking huge risks in a way to actually do that. And I think showing, you know, how people really do adopt those ideas, and they, you know, it's kind of, he creates a cult in that respect. You know, it just makes sense. And I think for me, it's kind of just making sure that we all try and live in the same way of just pushing forward and driving. There shouldn't be barriers. We should just make it happen. And, you know, let's not look back. Let's just look forward. And I think, you know, that's really great. And I kind of try and live every day a little bit like that and think, well, you know, why not? Why shouldn't we do this? Why shouldn't we have ESL 1 in the UK?
Yeah, it's super easy to be negative and to find and pick holes of things.
Especially for British people, right?
Yeah. We're pretty
cynical lot we are.
But both of those points are pretty sweet. Sorry, James, I'm just quite cognizant of the time that we have left, and I don't want to absolutely destroy James this weekend. If you're going to push this out on Wednesday. So the next one, which is always a bit of a strange question, just because a lot of people don't seem to have a very good answer for this, but what's the best tip for managing a healthy professional lifestyle in esports? Or is that basically impossible because there are no working hours? Who wants to take that one first?
I think you basically just have to be completely in it. You know, it's for most people that work in the industry, it is still just a massive passion, even though, you know, it's gone from being a passion that was done in your spare time to being a passion that is in, you know, your work time and your spare time. I think, you know, it's fine to have time off and relax, because, like, even the hard days that are really hard, you're doing something that you love. I think that, I guess that's like the difference. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've been in jobs before that have similar kind of really difficult hours, but your time off just feels so much more valuable. I don't know. Like, within esports, I'm just like, oh yeah, it's nice to have a day off, but it's not like, oh my god, I can't wait for the weekend.
Yeah, you're always looking forward to the next challenge and the next step forward.
I don't know how James feels. Dad now, that's probably a bit different.
No, I agree. I think we're going through a transitional state as the industry is maturing, where you know, we've all had to take quite an entrepreneurial view of the way in which we can grow the industry, and there's still a lot of work to be done to kind of mature that. But I think one of those points at maturity level is actually, you know, calming down on those hours. Because you think, if you compare what we're doing in esports, is very, very disruptive and it has a lot of synergies with other industries, yet we're always pushing the boundary in one way or another. And one of those boundary points was the sheer number of hours people were putting in to making this happen. And that, I'm not just covering the broadcast, but I'm covering every aspect of esports. It's the same, you know, whether you're league ops or you work in the production, or you're talent, or, you know, or a player, of course. And I think that will change over time. And I think one of the nice opportunities, and that, you know, I suggested this when we were working with Silvertown a few years ago, where you know, on this idea of an esports hub in Southeast London.
Yeah, we had a podcast on that a few weeks back.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, great. Yeah. Yes. I mean, one of the initial ideas I put to the table was that, how do we make that healthy lifestyle, you know, in terms of exercise and getting out there and physical social environments, how do we really adopt that? And I think we can, in the way in which we obviously have a passion to share, but we can also make a lot of, you know, the clear reasons why we love gaming, which is that competitive element, you know, and playing out a storyline, and bringing that into some sort of physical attribute, whether, you know, and, you know, quite crude idea was, imagine the gym being a game. You're actually in a big MOBA running on a running machine or rowing or whatever, but you're in that game and you're socializing while you're exercising and that sort of thing, we saw that with Pokemon Go as well, just reasons to get out there and really balance out your life in terms of, sitting in front of a VDU basically into the wider world and making sure, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of aspects of us spending more time in the VR environment as well as the future goes on, especially when Ready Player One comes out.
Plug me into the Matrix, sign me up. Especially when I'm over 60 and my knees start to ache. I'm done. Just plug me in. Yeah.
But I think that's not in human nature, and I think we will always strive to want to get out there, and there's a lot more to experience and travel the world.
The body's made to work. It's not made to sit around. I mean,
not the Wall-E model.
Yeah. I could literally wax on about that one point for another 20 minutes, but we've got one more question to go. So what is one thing that people don't know about you or wouldn't assume that you're interested in?
Rob?
I feel like I want to answer for you, James.
You know what I'm going to say, don't you?
I do know what you're going to say. You can go first.
I think the weirdest thing, I have a passion, I have a bit of a soft spot for trains.
Oh, Christ.
I know. And I know that sounds horrendous, but the thing I love about trains and land travel is the efficiency of it all. And the Hyperloop and what Elon's doing. That idea is exactly what trains should be about, and what we want to do is be able to get somewhere super fast, super convenient, super comfortably, and in many respects, that's one of the massive technical achievements of the UK specifically, and how that has impacted the world.
Yeah, of course.
And I think we're not at the end of it. I think that will continue to develop. I think it's just, I could go on about where the government are investing, but let's not get into that.
Sure. And Rob, what's one thing that people might not know about you?
I probably have a very, very dark sense of humour. Okay. I come across like really dry, and I think people think I'm really stern, but I'm not.
That's amazing.
Keep it well hidden.
That's good. That's good. All right, guys. Well, my producer's going to probably fly kick me in the head if we don't stop now. So, thank you so much for the time. I think that all of the listeners will really enjoy this episode, and I think that anyone from the UK industry or for other, I would say, emerging esports markets that are looking for a source of inspiration, that the kind of schedule that we have for this year and just the kind of state of what we've been able to do over the last 2 years is it's going to be absolutely awesome for them. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, well, tickets goes on sale on Thursday. Plug quickly. But let's make this happen. The community is going to make this happen. We've just made it an option. So let's work together. And I think that's, super, super key message from our side.
Yeah, I think it's a really great opportunity for everybody in the UK industry to be invigorating off the back of it. It's an event, obviously.
And what's the best way for everyone to reach out to you on socials if they want to get in touch?
Twitter for me, probably.
Twitter.
J1MCO.
Twitter or LinkedIn for me. Rob_Morg_Black.
Okay, awesome. Right, guys, well, that's all we've got time for.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much for the time. And
thanks, everyone.
We'll speak to you soon.